This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The primary runoff is over and done with, and now we have the candidates for the general election. But is this a reflection of the will of the people or just the voice of the few who decided to go out and vote? We're going to take a look at the results and the implications of the outcome, and we invite you to call in. Did your candidate win or did they flame out? Give us a call. Why do you think that happened? The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at @tprsource. Are you excited about the lineup for the general election and how that's going to go down? We're joined by Gilbert Garcia, the columnist for the San Antonio Express News, and he's been following this and writing about this pretty carefully. Abby Livingston is with us online. She's the D.C. Bureau Chief for the Texas Tribune. Welcome aboard. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Abby, so from your perch in Washington, D.C., what were you watching?
Well, I mean, this has been a more fun runoff night than I've had since I started this job. And the reason is we've had so many retirements in the Texas delegation this year, or in the last year, that there were a bunch of open seat races and there was competitiveness on a level we haven't seen in a really long time all over the state. But San Antonio is really key in all of this. And while there's a lot of activity, the most important district in this state is Texas 23. I like to think of it as the Rose Bowl of all the different congressional seats that we monitor. And San Antonio to El Paso, the sprawling district, nominated Gina Ortiz-Jones to take on Will Hurd, and this is going to be quite a fight, I'm expecting, in the fall.
It's the swinginest district in Texas. And your thoughts on that, Gilbert Garcia?
Yeah, I mean, this is a district that has swung back and forth over the past decade, with the exception of the last cycle when Will Hurd was able to kind of break that pattern and get reelected. And I think one of the things the takeaways, I think, from last night was that it was a night that the Texas Democratic Party, the organization, and also the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, they were very happy about it because there are three seats, congressional seats in the state that Hillary Clinton won but are held by Republicans now. And those obviously are the ones that they're really eyeing the most. And as Abby pointed out, District 23 is probably the top of that list. And they got, I think, the candidates that they wanted. They you know, Gina Ortiz-Jones was running against Rick Trevino, who's a former high school teacher from San Antonio, and he was knocking on pretty much every door he could find in the district. He was just a shoestring grassroots campaign. He was a Bernie Sanders delegate to the 2016 National Convention. So he had a very, you know, a passionate base, but he also had a pretty low ceiling, and they were looking at that. And I think the party leadership and thinking Gina Ortiz-Jones is she's the candidate who can win, has a shot.
Rick Trevino quit his job as a high school teacher, cashed in his retirement to fund his campaign, and then he carefully targeted voters that synced up with him on the Bernie side of things, and that managed to propel him and surprise everyone to get him into the runoff. And I was wondering if he was going to be able to duplicate that magic and find the voters and get them to the polls who are going to get him into the big show. But no, he really fell way short. And Gina Ortiz-Jones seems like her against Will Hurd. That's going to be quite the matchup. And so, Abby Livingston, people are going to say the money will flow.
Yeah, I mean, well, and to kind of go back to Mr. Trevino, March 6th night, I ate a lot of crow. There were a lot of campaigns that were not as good as I thought they were. One of them was Jay Huling's, who ran initially for that. And he was actually, I would say, in Washington, more the establishment favorite, and he basically flamed out.
That's right.
But what we saw last night was a lot of these campaigns, the rules of gravity sort of returned to politics. If you were a good fundraiser, if you had consultants hired, if you were polling, you tended to do better. There were very few shocks last night, and so that was very interesting. And I think what's going to be interesting with Mr. Hurd is he is extremely well respected in Washington as a campaigner. It's a healthy respect Democrats have for him, and Republicans are relying on him to get through this. What we don't know is how he's going to do against someone who is not Pete Gallego. Pete Gallego was the former state rep who ran twice against him. And so Ortiz-Jones does seem to have more excitement than Gallego had, and she's proving to be a better fundraiser. And so this is just anyone's guess. I don't bet on Texas 23. It is just too difficult of a race to understand and predict until after the fact.
Another interesting thing about that area is that there are pockets that are completely and entirely blue, and then you get more turnout in the runoff races in the primary than you do in the general election because there's not a lot of excitement there. And so you have a drop-off in the general election in voter turnout. And so if you have things that are happening that are going to excite the voters on election day in a general election, and talking about the Beto O'Rourke factor and maybe even the Lupe Valdez factor, you may see more people coming to the polls who are typical Democrat voters who would normally stay home.
And that's where I think that Lupe Valdez's victory in the gubernatorial runoff was important. I think that's another one that I think the party leadership looks, and I think they think that this is a more positive outcome, not because they think that Lupe Valdez can beat Greg Abbott in the gubernatorial race, but because even though I from observing the campaign, I think Andrew White was a stronger candidate. I think she struggled. Lupe Valdez really struggled with a lot of policy questions, but she's someone who has the potential to drive up Latino turnout, which is going to be very important in District 23. It could be very helpful to Beto O'Rourke in the Valley, for instance. And Andrew White, on a purely political level, I don't think was going to be able to really help anyone on the ticket in that way.
And your take on that, Abby Livingston?
Well, there was a major warning sign for Democrats statewide. I think they're going to have a better year than they've had in past cycles. But one thing that I think should be concerning is that the turnout for the gubernatorial runoff was the lowest since women's suffrage. So there just weren't very many people coming out for that race specifically. But what is different, I think, this cycle is there are active congressional campaigns, I believe, in every single district in the state, all 36. There's active House race, state ledge races, school board races in a way that we've never seen in conservative areas. And I do wonder if we're going to start, if we might see up ballot, down ballot, like candidates helping each other in a way that we have not seen in a really long time on the Democratic side.
The thing of Andrew White, if he had won and gotten into the general election, he had been the nominee for the Democratic Party. For governor, I mean, we could script that out right now. We would know exactly how the race will be rolled out. We know how it's going to be talked about. And we basically could write in the vote percentages right now because we've been here before.
Absolutely.
You know, but now with Lupe Valdez, we have a different kind of candidate who's going to run a different kind of race. We've heard for a long time that we got to give portions of the population a reason to get out and vote. And now we're going to be able to try that. And this may not be the race that's going to decide the future of Texas today, but it might decide the future of Texas tomorrow. I mean, Gilbert?
Yeah, and I think Democrats are really trying to chip away at the Republican advantage. I mean, I think most Democrats are realistic enough to know that, you know,
is this a grow the party action?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, you know, they're looking at individual congressional races, I think, this is where they really have a chance to have some impact. And I think, obviously, there's a lot of hope for Beto O'Rourke on the Democratic side. I think as far as, you know, the other statewide races, I don't think there's a realistic shot of winning, but I think it's trying to sort of chip away at that Republican advantage.
A lot of other races to talk about, some surprises in the turnout yesterday, what happened, the outcome. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. What do you think about Lupe Valdez as a candidate for governor? Do you think that she's going to give Greg Abbott some trouble? Other candidates, give us a call, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this one-minute break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're picking over what happened last night with the runoff elections and the turnout and who's going to the big show, the general election in November. And one of them is Paul Elizondo. Forgive me, Abby Livingston, but the Texas Tribune in Washington, D.C. We're going to go hyper-local here. Take a look at a Bexar County Commissioner's race for Precinct 2. And Paul Elizondo, in his last... This is his last hurrah, he says. We've had a challenger, Aketa Rodriguez, and he made him work for it.
Yeah, this is the He was going for his 10th term. He's going on 32 years uninterrupted as the county commissioner. And this is someone, I mean, he's known as the budget guru of the commissioner's court, but he's someone, if you think about all the things that, that the county has done during that time, I mean, he's been right at the center of it, whether it was getting the, you know, the AT&T Center or bringing Toyota to San Antonio, the Mission Reach, just on and on and on. And but there, yeah, I think there was a feeling among a lot of Democrats that, you know, he's been there too long. It's time for a change. He's known for kind of showing up late for meetings, and he was facing a challenge from Kether Rodriguez, who's a former Marine who's and also runs the county's Veterans Service Office. And he won last night with a little less than 52%. Speaking to the point that Abby made earlier about, you know, the traditional tools of politics, I think, came into play in the runoff. We saw this with Elizondo. We saw this in other races across the state where, you know, Elizondo just had, you know, he had about $500,000 war chest coming into this race. He had, you know, the organization, he had party veterans who've worked for him for decades. And it was just the money, the fundraising, the organization, the endorsements, they all came into play. Whereas Kether Rodriguez, she achieved a lot, but it was a real low budget campaign.
It looked like she was trying to catch him napping, which is something that he does from time to time during the meetings.
He's been known to.
But it seemed like at one point someone realized we've got to wake up and get active. And suddenly, midway through the campaign, through the runoff, the Elizondo they turned on all their jets. They got serious. Mm-hmm. He started making appearances, what he doesn't do normally. He even came here on the show and took questions from callers. And they ignited a social media campaign, and they really started to, and so they pulled it out. It looked like he was going to lose.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I think she's someone who can come back. You know, there's already, you know, I've heard people talking about District 5 city council race, you know, that which will be open. I mean, Shirley Gonzalez has one more term that she can run. But, you know, I think Kether Rodriguez, we're going to be hearing more from her. But it was just a case of a veteran who knows all the tricks and used all of them in what will probably be his final campaign.
And I want to look at another hyper-local race, but Abby Livingston, this might be of interest to you because it's for the Bexar County Republican Chairmanship. And this was a really divisive civil war going on in our local Republican Party versus the Joe Strauss-type camp versus the sort of Dan Patrick side of things. And one of them more practical, business friendly. All of them are pretty conservative, but it was just different kind of brands. And we saw that Cynthia Brim was able to win easily, and she was a part of the camp that was very part of the Dan Patrick side of things. And so Gilbert Garcia.
Yeah, well, this is, I think, speaks to the schizophrenic nature of the Republican Party in Bexar County and probably throughout the state, you know.
But they hear voices?
Well, this is what I would say, that you have the candidate that Joe Strauss favored as his successor in District 121, Steve Allison, won. And you know, Joe Strauss consistently won by big margins in his district while he was a candidate. But at the same time that Steve Allison, his handpicked successor, won in the runoff, you have Cynthia Brim, who's part of a group that decided to censure him last year.
Right, and also supported the candidate opposed to Lyle Larson, and yes, also is opposed to Will Hurd, and they call him a rhino.
Yeah, so there is, I think what you could probably say is that within Joe Strauss's district, he was and remains very popular, but obviously there's a big faction, and they tend to be the people who come out to vote for the Republican Party chairmanship elections. They see him as someone who's just destroying the Republican Party and is not conservative enough and so on.
But it's about the donors. And we've heard from donors saying they're not going to give money anymore to the local Republican Party.
And they have stopped. I mean, we've seen that in the last few months. They're not getting any money at all.
And so there's questions about whether or not they're going to be able to hang on to their headquarters. And so will those donors reopen up the faucet and begin to give again, or they got to figure out a new sustaining model for the party?
The traditional big money donors are not going to. I think they're going to separate themselves from the party. Maybe they'll be able to get some other people to contribute, but I think they're going to have real problems. And it's going to have an effect on judicial races, the down ballot races in Bexar County in November.
Okay, so Abby Livingston with the Texas Tribune up in Washington, D.C., your bureau chief, are you keeping an eye on what's happening to Lamar Smith's old district?
Yes.
Or his still district?
It's still his district. It will. He will move on in January. One of the hardest things I've had to, or most difficult things to explain to readers and angry people on Twitter is, from the Washington purview, not all of these districts are created equal when it comes to competitiveness. So as stated before, there are three races that the National Democrats are seriously targeting, a Dallas race, a Houston race, and then Will Hurd's race. But there are some races around the state, and Texas 21 is one of them. So this district runs from Austin down to San Antonio, where you have Democratic candidates who are raising serious money and have pollsters and are running real campaigns. These are Republican districts. And so I created a term last night on Twitter when I was half awake, struggling. I called them wavy. And the idea is maybe if there is just an absolute tsunami, the Democrats can maybe pick up one or two of those seats, and there's a handful of them around the state. And so I'm watching it. I'm not going to devote as much time to that as Texas 23 and the other two, but it's something I'm keeping, I'm monitoring. And the Republican nominee is Chip Roy. He's a known quantity in Austin's political circles. He was Ted Cruz's chief of staff. He's very conservative. And so we will see. It is too early to tell, but you know, there could be a situation in mid-October where suddenly San Antonio TV viewers start seeing television ads for this race.
So Representative Lamar Smith was the congressional liaison for the Texas delegation when it came to drawing the district maps. So he was basically able to draw the map that he wanted, his district, the way he wanted. But that was a long time ago. And since then, these congressional district maps have faded quite a bit. 8 years, we're approaching redistricting now. So, and with people moving to Texas and things changing and political attitudes, you're wondering, has it faded to a point where there is a Democrat's chance to take this district, Gilbert Garcia?
Well, speaking to the point about the changing of the district lines, I mean, Chip Roy, the Republican nominee in that district, doesn't live in the district. He lives just outside the district, and I think he's made the point that he used to live in the district until Lamar Smith had the lines redrawn.
That doesn't seem like that. I mean, Will Hurd doesn't even live in his district. And he's been that congressman for how long? He's never bothered to move.
Yeah, I don't think it's that big an issue. But obviously, it was something that was used against Roy during the Republican race,
and it fell flat.
Yeah, it did. And I think that I agree with Abby. I think it's going to be very tough for a Democrat to win. It's in that district, but it would require the backing of a wave, and I think I would say that. When I've talked to Republicans in the San Antonio area who've been following this race, they were saying to me as the runoff approached, Joseph Kopser was the one they worried about. Certainly, he was someone that they looked at and they thought, this one, he's a tech entrepreneur. He can kind of speak the language of business. He's a military vet. He served in the Iraq War. He's someone that, you know, I think as far he's actually pretty progressive or presented himself that way during the primary, but I think that he's someone that maybe can communicate with some wavering Republicans better than some Democrats could.
And Abby Livingston, do you think Chip Roy's connection to Ted Cruz is going to help or hurt him with those middle voters?
Well, that's the big question, and that's the Senate race question as well. You know, I've often said publicly and privately, I wouldn't be paying attention to the Senate race half as much if this was John Cornyn. Ted Cruz definitely is a polarizing force, and so he definitely used his ties to Ted Cruz in this primary, but it could hurt him. I mean, there is such enthusiasm for Beto O'Rourke that I do wonder if it's about O'Rourke or if it's about wanting to defeat Ted Cruz. And so that is the central question, I think, to a lot of what's going to happen in November.
So the battle between Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz, that's going to have an impact. It will certainly taint the feelings people have about Chip Roy. There's going to be some crossover contamination.
Maybe, or, you know, Ted Cruz could really get out the vote. And, you know, I mean, that was Ted Cruz's entire presidential strategy was, you know, he will win by getting the conservative vote out. So I could see it helping him or I could see it hurting him. But I have been so humbled in my political instincts in the last 2 years that I'm a little cautious on this one.
Yeah. So, Abby, what else are you watching in Texas?
Well, I've made this point several places and in my stories, but I think it's really, I think that there's an, yes, a lot of women did really well last night. There were several women who are going on to the general election and congressional campaigns.
And in Georgia, too, that's worth noting.
Yes, but in Texas specifically, there was a very serious problem of, there were three women in the 38-member delegation, and they were all over the age of 65. The last woman elected to a full term as a freshman in Congress from Texas was Kay Granger in 1996. I've actually posed the question to some of these women, could you imagine that there could be no women in the Texas delegation, and there was actual fear of this. And this was already settled on March 6th, but the first two Latinas, Veronica Escobar from El Paso and Sylvia Garcia from Houston, are all but certain to go to Congress. And, I mean, we may see a couple others break through. And then just up and down the ballot, women, for the first time I've ever seen in covering politics, seem to have an inherent advantage in some of these races.
What advantage is that?
We just saw them outperform. I mean, the Kopser race, she didn't do as well this time, but Mary Street Wilson was his runoff rival, and she beat him in the first round and had almost no money. And so there was just Gina Ortiz Jones. She was not the favored person to win that nomination. It was Jay Hewlings, and there was just they were running good campaigns. They've had the support of Emily's List. There's a lot of factors, but I do think that there's just a little more juice to them. I'm assuming that a lot of women are turning out to vote and wanting to vote for people who they can relate to.
There were plenty of congressional races across Texas where the second place shower in the original primary turned out to be the winner last night. So that's a viable strategy, is to just get to the primary and slug it out with a low voter turnout. Is that catching on? Is that like seems to be a pathway, Abby?
You know, it certainly worked for some folks, and it certainly tempered some of my predictions. I think a lot of it's just keeping your head down and just slogging away. And for instance, in Houston, there was a real nasty Republican race. Dan Crenshaw was a veteran, and he was running against State Rep Kevin Roberts. And Roberts he placed first and just attacked Crenshaw over and over. And that's just not how front runners tend to behave. And Crenshaw just kept his head down and kept going. So, you know, I think lay low and then go at it at the very end is a pretty good strategy.
And so Gilbert Garcia, did you see anything that would give anyone hoping for a blue wave hope?
Well, I think only in the sense that that I think the Democrats who have the best chance of succeeding, or at least helping turnout in November, won last night, I think, generally speaking. So I think that the conditions are conducive as far as the candidates that they've got to offer, whether it's Joseph Kopser or Gina Ortiz Jones or some of the others that we talked about. But the
goals, the target goals, I mean, I don't think that anyone can reasonably hope that there's going to be big changes in statewide offices, but my blue wave in trying to recapture more seats in the Texas House and in the Texas delegation to Washington D.C.
I still think it's an unknown. I mean, we've seen that changes in the polling as far as the generic ballot. I think that we you know, in 5.5 months, a lot can change as far as the public perception of this Congress, of this president. There are things that we could find out related to the Mueller investigation or other factors. So I think it's still kind of unclear. So
we'll see if Texas plays a role in flipping the House in Washington, D.C. I want to thank Abby Livingston, the D.C. Bureau Chief for the Texas Tribune, Gilbert Garcia, columnist for the San Antonio Express News. And when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about the latest developments with the Santa Fe school shooting, what's happening in Austin, talking about policy changes and trying to keep these shootings from happening again. And we want to hear from you. What's your reaction to the shooting? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this.